in this mission, and we were able to work along and help save some lives that night. But what hurts me is that every day this is happening, and every day there are innocent people losing their lives.
Dr. Elahi, I wanted to get your final comment and your message as you come back to your practice in Charlotte, North Carolina, how this has changed you and what you'll be telling the medical community here.
I will say from 2019's experience and our current experience just now, what you'll realize from the people in Gaza is they just want the world to know and understand what they're going through. You heard it in this gentleman's voice that he's just expressing a plea to the world to provide help to the people of Gaza, see what's happening there. And when I come back to the comfort of my home and the comfort of my family and the comfort of a modern healthcare system, it is really difficult to understand what's happening. I think we just have to open our eyes, share with the world what's happening there, and open our hearts for them.
Dr. Azim Elahi and Dr. Ismail Mer, back from volunteering Gaza's European Hospital with the Amana Medical Relief Team. That does it for our show. A happy early birthday to Dennis Moynihan. Democracy Now! Produced with a remarkable team. I thank them all. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Postmodern, a reaction against the ideas and values of modernism. Avant-garde, new, unusual, and experimental ideas. KBOO, a community radio station that supports both. Join us in our mission to push the status quo by becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give. Between now and May 25th to donate and help us reach our $60,000 spring membership drive goal.
Tune in every weekday morning from 5:30 to 7 a.m. for variations on the theme of folk music during KBOO's Folk Strip. Each morning brings you a different DJ and a wonderful variety of acoustic and roots music, both traditional and contemporary. You'll hear the latest from singer-songwriters, happy jigs and reels, bluesy folk, a sea shanty or two, some old favorites, local artists and artists from around the world, a touch of Cajun, a dose of indie, and a smidge of jug band. It's probably the best way on earth to wake up. So let us start your day with a smile. Again, that's every weekday morning from 5:30 to 7 a.m. for KBOO's folk music programs.
This program is made possible by KBOO members and support from the League of Women Voters of Portland, providing nonpartisan election information at lwvpdx.org. The League of Women Voters has online voters' guides, videos, and podcasts to help voters understand the state and local candidates and measures that will be on the ballot this May. Nonpartisan voter information at lwvpdx.org.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. A special thank you to the recent donors to our spring membership drive. Thank you to Eric O, Jason D, and three anonymous donors. You make our avant-garde, experimental, alternative radio possible. Be like these nice people. Consider donating online at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Now, your KBOO evening news.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this spring membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. Coming up on this spring membership... Coming up on this spring membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News, Portland Street Response would maintain its funding under Mayor Wheeler's new proposed budget.
Portland police arrest 30 pro-Palestine demonstrators at PSU.
And Oregon's Bias Response Hotline enters its fourth year of operation. We speak with the Oregon DOJ for more about the program.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 3rd, 2024. KBOO is currently in our spring membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Nina Mayfair.
And I'm Ezra. Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler's new proposed budget spares Portland Street Response from major cuts. Portland Street Response is a program that responds to nonviolent calls to emergency services. They send out teams of mental health professionals and EMTs instead of police to help people in crisis, particularly on the streets. Portland Street Response had a $10 million budget last year and faced potential cuts of up to $3 million this year. Mayor Wheeler said, quote, "My budget fully funds public safety bureaus and public safety programs," end quote. Portland has its Clean Energy Fund to thank for filling in the gaps in the city's budget. $38 million of the budget comes from the climate justice tax on large retailers. Mayor Wheeler also said the budget will fill an $11 million deficit in Portland's fire and rescue budget to continue the Community Health Assess and Treat Program, or CHAT for short. CHAT dispatches pairs of fire medics instead of firefighters or police to help residents with low acuity health issues who need treatment in the moment. CHAT is designed to keep people out of crowded emergency rooms unless their conditions are life-threatening. Low acuity means the issue isn't likely to progress rapidly or severely before the patient can visit a regular doctor instead of an emergency room. CHAT has also treated people who've overdosed. Portland Street Response would remain fully staffed under the current budget proposal, and it brings 10 new firefighter positions into play to help reduce the need for overtime. City Council will hold a public hearing on the proposed budget on Thursday, May 9th.
On Thursday morning, Portland police broke into the library at Portland State University in the morning to remove and arrest protesters who had been staging a demonstration and encampment at the site since Thursday evening last week. The encampment was related to student efforts to pressure PSU into severing ties with Boeing, which is heavily implicated in supplying Israel's assault on the Gaza Strip. Over 34,000 Palestinians have been killed since the Hamas-led attacks on Israel in October. A costly Israeli assault on the refugee-crowded city of Rafah seems more likely by the day. According to the PSU Vanguard newspaper, protesters first camped out in front of the PSU library on Thursday night on City Park's land. They were cleared out by police before midnight, moving the encampment up onto the steps and entryway of the library. On Monday, protesters entered the locked building, prompting PSU President Ann Cudd to close the campus and ask PPB to clear the encampment. Thursday morning, police say they arrested at least 12 people at the library, including 4 students.
According to police, eyewitness reports published on Twitter and KBOO reporters at the scene, a crowd gathered around the van transporting those arrested away from the library. Police moved the crowd back and on occasion used pepper spray and other force. Police were armed with so-called less lethal impact munition launchers, but there were no reports of their use. A crowd of 150 to 200 people faced off with lines of police at various locations around Southwest Broadway and Hall Streets throughout the afternoon, dwindling to dozens in the early evening. According to police, they then left the library in the hands of PSU contractors to begin cleanup. At that point, the PSU library was left unattended, and numerous protesters re-entered the building. Protesters removed items left behind and attempted to re-establish barricades before being once again cleared by police, who arrested 8 more people. In all, PPB arrested 30 people yesterday, and PSU police arrested 2. This includes 6 students who potentially face expulsion as well as criminal charges for their participation in the protest against PSU's relationship with Boeing and the ongoing Israeli assault on Gaza. One anonymous protester told KBOO, quote, "If bad things happen to me, I'm all right with that. I'm okay with the consequences of my actions against genocide."
It's been 4 years since Oregon started its bias response hotline, and officials say more people should know about and use the service. Over the past year, the hotline served over 14,000 people with their bias and hate crime complaints. Faye Stetz Waters is the Director of Civil Rights and Social Justice at the Oregon Department of Justice. She explains that hate crimes were named as bias crimes and bias incidents through an updated state law in 2020.
Bias incident is non-criminal conduct that targets a person based on their protected class. It's a hostile expression of animus targeting a person based on a perceived protected class, either their race, their color, their sexual orientation, religion, national origin, gender identity, or disability. And so when that something like that happens, prior to the hotline being established, there was no place to report this. It's not criminal behavior, so police weren't going to investigate it, and had been kind of neglected area of study. We've been able to create this hotline to receive these types of reports of conducts that's been happening across our state to folks, document what happened, and provide trauma-informed support for a person who's experienced hate or bias in their community, and then also provide them with resources. If a person is a victim of a crime, bias crime victims also have rights around those crimes. So we explain what those rights are. We are transparent about what they can expect should they report what happened to them to law enforcement. We can even help transfer and kind of help hand off that call to law enforcement and support them in making that report if that's what they choose. But basically, it's a way for people to kind of share what happened to them and unburden themselves from it. We know that what's been reported to the hotline is not all that has occurred. It's just the tip of the iceberg. Most people don't report the things that have been happening to people in our community have been harmful and humiliating, and they're meant to degrade and hurt a person. And so it's very difficult to talk about that. That we have a hotline just of its kind in the country to be able to take these reports, to be able to understand and believe people when they report what's happened to them and support them with resources is a very worthwhile work.
The Oregon Bias Response Hotline is a non-emergency line that is staffed by advocates from 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. Waters says hateful and biased behavior has been happening for a lot longer than there's been a hotline to report it.
We're getting surges in reports around the state around hate and bias that are occurring. And so it's really important for us to have this message affirming that you means every person, belong means here in Oregon, period. You're here just as you are. You don't have to hide who you are. You don't have to code switch. You are here standing in Oregon in all of your glorious splendor, and there's a space for you. We celebrate you, we value you, and you belong, period. We want to echo that message, to echo the sentiment that Oregon is an open and welcoming state. This is to build community. We are trying to build community. And we want specifically our people of color, our Black and brown folks, our indigenous population to know this is a resource that's available to you as well. You don't have to have all of the information. We have trained advocates who are trauma-informed on the hotline. They are there to listen. They will ask a few questions, but really this is to kind of make an account, a confidential report about what happened and to help get a person support.
That was Faye Stutz Waters, the Director of Civil Rights and Social Justice at the Oregon DOJ. The number for Oregon's Bias Response Hotline is 1-844-924-2427. People can also chat with advocates on the website, standinguptohate.oregon.gov.
A new film documents the 2018 campaign by the group Colorado Rising to pass a ballot initiative mandating a 2,500-foot setback from fracking wells to nearby schools and residences. The campaign failed, but it only galvanized the state's environmental community. Mark Richardson has more.
A new film documents the 2018 battle between Colorado environmentalists and the oil and gas industry over proposed fracking regulations. The film also documents a grassroots effort by Colorado Rising to pass a ballot initiative that would create a 2,500-foot setback for all hydraulic fracturing wells in the state, particularly in disadvantaged neighborhoods. Sarah Schulte is with the Boulder County Green Faith Organization, which recently previewed the film for about 100 members. She says the film has a strong message.
What probably makes the film pretty dramatic and kind of shocking is the lengths to which oil and natural gas industries in Colorado set out to thwart them, not only with some of the tactics you might expect, but also some kind of more nefarious tactics, sabotaging their signature gathering, for example.
In the end, the petroleum industry defeated the measure after a $50 million campaign to oppose it. Schulte said Colorado Rising raised only $1 million for its campaign. After the election, the state adopted a 1,000-foot drilling setback from schools and residential property lines. Hydraulic fracturing, commonly called fracking, involves drillers injecting a mixture of chemicals underground to break up the shale and free the oil. The chemicals, sometimes toxic, used in the process can pollute groundwater and make the surrounding land unstable. Schulte says the movie had a powerful effect on the group's members.
I think most people were pretty angry and maybe even a little sad after seeing how these kind of politics play out in Colorado. They asked questions like, what can we do next? How do you keep going when it's so difficult to fight such a big and powerful industry?
The film, Fracking the System, Colorado's Oil and Gas Wars, is currently being previewed by select audiences. It has won the Spirit of Activism Award at the Colorado Environmental Film Festival and the Environmental Award at the 2024 DocuTA International Film Festival. For Colorado News Connection, I'm Mark Richardson.
President Biden defends dissent, but says order must prevail on campus. Former President Trump won't commit to accepting the 2024 election results. And Nebraska lawmakers circumvent a ballot measure repealing private school vouchers. With more on the story, it's Catherine Carley with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Dissent is essential to democracy, but dissent must never lead to disorder or to denying the rights of others so students can finish the semester and their college education.
President Joe Biden says Americans have the right to protest, but not the right to cause chaos. In a televised address, Biden condemned the campus unrest over Gaza, but rejected Republican demands to send in the National Guard. He said the growing student protests haven't changed his posture toward the Israel-Hamas war. School administrators who've called in police to dismantle student encampments are facing faculty backlash. At UCLA, they're reportedly considering a work stoppage. Columbia University professor Rashid Khalid says his colleagues have called for a vote of no confidence in the school's president.
This is the conscience of a nation speaking through your kids, through young people who are risking their futures, who are risking suspension, expulsion, criminal arrest in order to wake people up in this country.
More than 2,000 people have been arrested on college campuses in the past 2 weeks. Former President Donald Trump is refusing to commit to accepting the results of the 2024 election. He tells the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel he'd accept a loss in Wisconsin, but only, as he puts it, if everything's honest. The Biden campaign said Trump's comments again confirm that he's a threat to democracy. Montana is the latest state to let parents pay private school tuition with public money, but advocates for students with disabilities are suing to stop that. Riley Summers Flanagan with Helena-based Upper Seven Law says to get the money, students must first renounce their right to a free quality education under the state constitution.
It appears just to be a gambit to try to privatize public money and to send it to vendors who have no accountability and no responsibility to genuinely meet the needs of kids with disabilities.
Meanwhile, Nebraska lawmakers have voted to circumvent a ballot measure aimed at repealing a school voucher program. Democratic State Senator Carol Blood calls it an act of cowardice to deny the will of the voters.
When we refuse to hear the voices of the 117,000 people who said, yes, we want to vote on this issue, who are we to decide that we know better than them?
Alabama lawmakers will let President Biden be on the November ballot. Last month, the Secretary of State warned Democrats their national convention, when Biden would be formally nominated, would miss the state's certification deadline. Democratic State Senator Marika Coleman praised the bipartisan fix.
If one of the nominees is not on the Alabama ballot, then that's a whole lot of people in the state of Alabama that are disenfranchised.
The Biden campaign faces the same issue in Ohio, where lawmakers have less than a week to make the adjustment. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to a spring membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $60,000 by May 25th. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be rainy with an overnight low of 43. Tomorrow's weather will be rainy as well with a high of 53. Today in history, in 1978, the first unsolicited bulk commercial email, which would later become known as spam, is sent to every ARPANET address on the west coast of the United States. The quote of the day is from American author Joseph Heller, best known for the book Catch-22, a satirical novel on war and bureaucracy. Heller said, quote, "Everyone in my book accuses everyone else of being crazy. Frankly, I think the whole society is nuts. And the question is, what does a sane man do in an insane society?"
Nevada tribes are seeking a national monument designation for Bossawabi, a culturally and spiritually significant valley. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribes in Nevada are seeking the designation of a new national monument in the east central part of the state. They say it holds cultural and spiritual significance, including being a valley where indigenous people suffered several massacres. Alex Gonzalez has more.
Eli Shoshone Tribal Chairman Alvin Marcus explains Bossawabi was a place of religious gatherings, healing ceremonies, and celebrations, which made it a target for settlers who expanded into indigenous Niue territories of the Western Shoshone Tribe. Marcus says the federal government now has the chance to stand with tribes and honor Bossawabi.
It in the past was a place of celebration and became a place of mourning. So it means enough to me that it needs to be protected forever.
He says before the tragedies that took place there, Bossawabi was a place of happiness and should be remembered for both the good and bad. He adds people from across the Great Basin still go to the area to visit their ancestors, pray, and hold ceremonies. Three tribes are collecting signatures with the goal of getting Bossawabi designated as a national monument.
Time is running out, so we need action now. It's time for the federal government and our representatives to center our tribes and our history and do the right thing.
He says a national monument designation within the national park system also would help familiarize more people with the Bossawabi story. Those opposed to the monument recognition argue that Nevada already has too much public land where uses are restricted, but proponents argue this is false. I'm Alex Gonzalez.
After the recent statewide Native Youth Games in Anchorage, students returned home to show off their medals for traditional games like the two-foot high kick and the kneel jump. But there was also some unofficial friendly competition with this sound. Seal calls could be heard throughout the stadium full of people at various times at the games. KMBA's Rhonda McBride sought out the source of these sounds, a tradition that is as old as the games themselves.
The sound of enthusiastic crowds often fills the air at the Alaska Airlines Center. But at the Native Youth Games, you hear that and more. Although Samuel Meekum perfected the seal call during seal hunts in his hometown of Unalakleet, he's happy to belt it out to a sea of people.
Oh, it's fun. It gets everybody riled up and it gets people's attention. And also, it's like our way of shouting and cheering on your teammates. So like at a track meet, you'd yell at your teammates, right? And like you'd yell their name and say, "Keep on going, keep on going." But here you would do a seal call.
As the master of ceremonies at the Native Youth Games, Marjorie Tawbone uses the seal call to get the athletes pumped up.
Okay, we do like a two.
You start off with a low sound, like ooh, and then you learn how to make a high sound, ooh, and then you crack your voice, so ooh, and then you just kind of figure out how to do it, and eventually you're able to go ooh real easy.
Tawbone says seals are naturally curious creatures. Traditionally, hunters use the call to distract them.
the hunters would have to mimic a seal and get as close as they could, close enough to where they could harpoon it.
The seal call was also used to signal hunter success, a joyful sound that Tawbone says helps to bring the sounds of the land and sea into the city. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Marijuana legalization groups are celebrating after the Drug Enforcement Agency proposed to reclassify cannabis as less dangerous or addictive than Schedule I drugs such as heroin or LSD. Marijuana would be downgraded to the same category as ketamine or some anabolic steroids. Dale Geringer with the nonprofit Cal Normal says his organization first sued the DEA more than 50 years ago to get cannabis reclassified to Schedule III.
This is a long overdue step forward for the federal government, but it does not actually change the legality of marijuana that people get at legal dispensaries in California or elsewhere.
Opponents cite concerns about the safety of long-term marijuana use. State laws are legalizing recreational and medical marijuana are not affected. However, the new classification would clear the way for more federally funded research on marijuana and would benefit dispensaries by making them eligible for certain tax deductions. Geringer said he'd like Congress to legalize recreational marijuana nationwide.
What needs to happen is marijuana has to be formally descheduled, taken out of the Controlled Substances Act, and treated like alcohol or tobacco, actually, by its own separate laws.
The White House Office of Management and Budget is expected to review this proposed rule, which would then be released for public comment.
You're listening to a spring membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 3rd, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Sam Bowman and Ezra. The producer and engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Catherine Carley, Antonia Gonzalez, Mark Richardson, Eric Tegerthoff, Mike Moen, and Suzanne Potter. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on a 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Nina Mayfair.
And I'm Ezra. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. KBOO is currently in our spring membership drive, so now is a great time to join. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, the biggest story right now is the way that U.S. news media that claim to be deeply invested in free speech rights are showing that they only mean it sometimes, which means they don't really mean it. The New York Times ran the headline on April 25th, "Pro-Palestinian encampment spread, leading to hundreds of arrests." We are to understand and accept that people peacefully protesting their tuition and tax dollars going to support a genocide that has killed minimally 40,000 people just forces U.S. law enforcement to, whatever their will, truncheon 20-year-olds who are sitting quietly in tents and, if possible, prevent their ever working again. Yes, unapologetic neo-Nazis marching with torches chanting "Jews will not replace us," that was protected speech that we should be as a nation proud of allowing to happen. But the same outlets say students saying they oppose the mass murder of tens of thousands of people is, well, we just can't have that. People looking to corporate news media as bastions of free speech have been wrong for more than a minute, but it's becoming crystal clear now. Information is a public good, journalism is a public service, but media is a business. And the goal of media companies to appease funders and advertisers is going to bring them into conflict.